Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to be with you today. We begin, as always, with the latest on health and healing. We're going to talk about the omega-3 fatty acids, turmeric, how to deal with type 2 diabetes, and the Mediterranean diet. Vasectomies are linked to something not good, and drinking kombucha tea. And the magic number, how many days a week do you need to exercise to see real benefits? That's what we're going to talk about. We begin with a study from Cornell College, and it's about the omega-3 fatty acids and how they're linked to lung health maintenance. The American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine published findings of an association between an increase in plasma levels of your omega-3 fatty acids and reduced lung function. The more you have that you need, the better your lung function. The less omega-3, the less lung function. This is very important, not just for people with asthma and COPD, but also any form of bronchial congestion, excess mucus, where you're not getting enough oxygen in. So just remember your omega-3 fatty acids, and that's important, especially the DHA fraction. Now, from Montclair State University comes a study about turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, and it strikes at the root cause of cancer malignancy. So this is a big deal. U.S. researchers evaluated the primary polyphenol in the Indian spice known as curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, for its ability to target cancer stem cells, which are believed to be at the root cause of tumor formation and malignancy. So if you have surgery and you don't get the stem cells out, they can regrow. Whereas conventional models of cancer assume that the majority of the cancer cells within a tumor possess self-renewal capabilities to differing degrees, this model then took a look and said, well, what about the stem cells? It's really the stem cells that cause the cancer to metastasize and grow. So turmeric or curcumin every day can make a huge difference in the outcome. So turmeric, where you get curcumin, but I suggest get curcumin because only a small fraction of turmeric is curcumin. Why not just get 700, 1,000 milligrams? Get that by itself. There's lots of studies, thousands of studies on curcumin and how it kills various cancer cell lines. So this particular study did just that. Curcumin appears to directly and indirectly influence at least three self-renewal pathways within cancer stem cells. And the authors list 12 different cancer cell lines which curcumin appear to affect in a positive way. That's important. So get your curcumin on a regular basis. And then if you have cancer, whatever your oncologist is suggesting, let him know that there are peer-reviewed studies in the National Library of Medicine showing curcumin should be a part of that. Also, type 2 diabetes. A lot of Americans have it. In fact, even more Americans have pre-diabetes. They're just one step away from having full diagnosed diabetes. Well, the ultra-processed foods that people consume can cancel out the benefits of a Mediterranean diet. So says the Institute of Research in Hospitalization and Healthcare in Italy. What's this mean in lay language? It means that a new study suggests that people with type 2 diabetes should not be focusing only on the fiber, fat, and sugar contents of their foods, but reduce or eliminate ultra-processed foods from their diet. Potato chips, pretzels, candies, those are all processed. Pizza, totally processed. Get the processing out and get more fresh vegetables, fruits, healthy fats like olives and olive oil, avocados, back into the diet and get low to no sugar. Two specific diets are often recommended, the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet, D-A-S-H. These diets give a lot of importance to specific food groups like whole grains, legumes, nuts, fruits, and vegetables. In fact, they looked this year at 107 different studies and concluded that higher intake of whole grains, fiber, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, and fish were inversely associated with all-cause death in individuals with type 2 diabetes. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So if you want to live a longer life, if you wanted to live healthily until you no longer have diabetes, get the sugar, get the processed foods out, get the soft drinks, the cola, the caffeine out of the diet. No more French fries, no more junk, no more potato chips, no more buns, hot dog buns, hamburger buns, all right? And then get fresh foods in. That'll make a difference and help you prevent premature death. And also a new study from Harvard School of Public Health shows that vasectomies is linked with aggressive prostate cancer risk. In the largest and most comprehensive study of its kind, researchers from Harvard School of Public Health find that vasectomy is associated with a small increased risk of prostate cancer and a larger increased risk of advanced lethal prostate cancer. This was published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, where they note that the link is still evident among men who had regular PSA tests, suggesting the link with increased risk of lethal cancer cannot be due to a diagnosed bias. So if you don't have to have a vasectomy, don't. It can increase your risk of lethal cancer of the prostate, and no one needs that, right? So there's a lot you can do to have a healthier prostate. A healthy vegan diet, saw palmetto, Africanum pygium, stinging nettle extract, quercetin, all are good for the prostate, and zinc. And finally, drinking kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A, tea, may reduce blood sugar levels in people with type 2 diabetes. This study was done at both the University of Nebraska and Georgetown University. So the message is simple. People with type 2 diabetes who drank the fermented, and it's a fermented, you have to acquire a taste for it, tea, kombucha for 4 weeks, had lower fasting blood glucose levels compared to when they consumed a similar tasting placebo beverage. And this was very important because we drink way too many beverages that are sugar loaded, high fructose corn syrup, caffeine, carbonated. None of that is good for you. But when you go into the health food stores now, you'll see kombucha, raspberry, kombucha, you know, mint. So they've disguised kind of the extra tart flavor with these natural extracts. So you taste something fruity, and it's not a problem at all. So try that on a regular basis. Remember, kombucha is just a tea fermented with bacteria and yeast and was consumed as early as 200 BC in China. But it didn't become popular in the United States until the 1990s. And it boosts up the immunity. It boosts up energy, reduces food cravings. It reduces inflammation. And that's important, all right? All good with kombucha. And, well, one last thing. This is from Edith Cowan University in Australia. There's a magic number. How many days a week you need to exercise to see real benefit? And we all want benefit from exercise. We just don't know, if you're the average person, what kind, how long, how often. And it's all over the board. But a new study saw participants perform a single 3-second maximum effort bicep contraction, similar to slowly lowering a heavy dumbbell from a bent arm to a straight arm, weekly minimum frequency of one maximal contraction, meaning a slow curl, right, up and down, increases muscle strength of the elbow flexors. And this was published in the European Journal of Applied Physiology. So this is especially important for older people who lose their muscle mass and are very weak. You've got to get little weights, 1 pound in each hand, and slowly lift them as you breathe up and then lower them down, up and lower them down. Try doing a bent knee push-up, even if you can only do one initially, or not even one. Every type of resistance exercise helps you, and you should do that 6 days a week for about 20 minutes. Now, that's only part of it. More importantly is to do aerobic workouts. Biking in high gear, where you really have to stress your body to pump not one of those bikes you got 10 speed and you're on the least effort speed. That doesn't help you at all. That's called a junk exercise. But power walking, and then about every quarter mile, speed up as fast as you can, and then slow down, speed up and slow down. All right, jogging, biking, swimming. But you should do it for either 15,000 steps or about 4 miles, build up to that, and do it slowly, get loose, get relaxed, stretch properly, slow stretching like in yoga, and then do your workout and then pick the pace up. You want some quality resistance exercise in there as well. So that's it. I'm Gary Noll. Go to GaryNoll.com for the latest articles, essays, and videos, but also very popular with a lot of people. Thousands of people are watching the free videos. They're done as a public service called Classrooms on the Air. And right now, this week, I'm doing ones on women's health issues, breast cancer, endometriosis, candidiasis, all these different problems, menopause. So I've got hundreds and hundreds of these up there already. Go to Gary Noll YouTube and download them. They're non-controversial. Now, these are not hard-hitting investigative reports. Go to Rumble under Gary Noll or Odyssey. But we're also going to be posting these up on Perrin.live very shortly. So those are free and they help you. Every day, something new. All right? We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. This is a message for everyone who listens to this program and watches this program. It's about survival in the new woke order. Or stated differently, awakening to the woke dystopia. Either way you put it, we have a lot of crisis that we're not dealing with. A lot of people have given up. A lot of people feel an existential threat. They don't know exactly what it's from, but they know they don't feel at ease. They don't feel calm. They don't feel positive. They don't feel optimistic. Artificial intelligence right now is just decimating jobs in the next 3 to 5 years based upon its growth and how fast it's incorporating itself into our fabric of our society. Millions of jobs are going to be gone forever. What does that do to a person who has to survive on that job? Who's looking out for the average person, the working person, the poor? These are questions that are not being addressed. And we have no real political solutions because we have a house divided in our body politic. We can't even get to a point where we can create universal health care. We can't get to a place also where we can take money out of politics and allow one person, one vote. Now we have billionaires who control millions of votes. How do we get here? How do we get to where identity politics and critical race theory and wokeism is being taught in corporate America at all levels to virtue signal we're a good corporation by our products because we're aware of all the equity problems out there and we want to deal with that? It's all a dog and pony show. So here is what Richard Gill and I have put together to help give us a little better insight into our crisis and how we might be able to better deal with it. First, keen observers of history realize that the United States and the West have entered a new dark age. The light of reason and the capacities for critical thought are rapidly being snuffed out by widespread emotional immaturity. The erosion of American culture has largely been the result of a decades-long merger of adolescent attitudes and the corporate commodification of human life and values. Mass culture, Hannah Arendt observed, was not culture but personal entertainment, or better stated, self-aggrandizement. Our civilization's collapse started at the intellectual degree that we went into a state of darkness, and the catastrophic failure in democracy was presently predicted by many of our wisest culture critics such as Lewis Lapham, Morris Berman, and Robert Kaplan, two decades ago. So this was slow coming, but now it's accelerating. Likewise, those who were giving us clarion calls who said, wait a moment, something is terribly wrong here. Almost imperceptible, but it's infiltrating like a slow-growing cancer metastasizing into the essential organs of the body. You may not be aware of it, you may not feel it, but it's happening. We chose not to listen, not to look, not to learn, and not to change. And now we have a full-on metastasized cultural, political, cancer invading every cell of our body. Earlier words and works of science fiction, such as Fahrenheit 451, The Perfect Day, and other works such as Leibowitz, describe not only the dystopian triumph of a pure citizenry blindly subservient to the tricks and treats dispersed by an elite corporate and political class, but also the consequences of the intentional disorientation of a grossly distracted human mind. Think in a day how many times you are distracted, and by what, and for what reason, and by whom, and what is their motivation that is not discussed. Aldous Huxley perfectly predicted our times in his important book, Brave New World. Hungarian-born journalist and author Arthur Koestler envisioned a future America being populated with human autonomons in a replay of the fall of the Roman Empire. At such time, the U.S. will have turned into a, quote, soulless, politically corrupt, everybody for himself civilization, end quote. And although these modern critics and fiction authors may not have foreseen the exact structures and popular social values society has now transitioned into, such as the worst expressions of critical race theories, inverted racism, institutionalized woke culture, endemic mental disorders, and growing gender dysphoria, they nevertheless accurately observe the trends that have led America to this impasse of moral anarchy. Critical race theory and the woke movement will never democratize society. Rather, it will further erode universal ethical norms to a cacophony of subjective emotions and aberrant personal beliefs felt at any given moment by any person. These mythologies, and that's all they are, mythologies about race and gender, which are mistaken for hard truths, absolute truths, now permeate our elementary schools, all of our universities, which are being fashioned into what Morris Berman calls a gigantic dolt manufacturing machine. And the global elite, political legislators, and pseudo-intellectuals dominating our educational institutions, willingly or not, declare this feat of social deterioration as a political victory. For whom and by what measure is this a victory? Look around. Look at the degeneration of our values, our morals. Look at what happens when a person is attacked on a subway and everyone goes to their cell phone to take a video or picture, but no one calls the police. No one interjects themselves to stop it. We are normalizing this type of social anarchy, and it is happening everywhere. At the core of our society's collective days into the marketplace of frivolous pursuits resides a deep existential emptiness. In particular, this vacuity of a life enriched by meaning and purpose is being acted out by the younger generations. In 2022, the national suicide rate again rose to 14.3 suicides per 100,000. 2 years earlier, 5.2 million either planned or attempted to take their own lives. Never before in American history have we seen anything even remotely comparable. They've given up. They've become apathetic. They had anger that was not resolved, an unrequited sense of not connecting with anything essential, meaningful, relevant, moral. Instead, they were enveloped in this mass hysteria that irrelevance was what was important. Pay attention to that which is dystopian, not optimism, not meritocracy, not creating something of a solution where there was a problem, because we've created no solutions, none, anywhere in the last 40 years. Just take a look around. Tell me which city is better today because of all the promises and euphemisms used by all the presidents and all the president's associates and all the major corporations and the trillions upon trillions of dollars that have been extracted in profit from all segments of society, including the poorest. Now show me what they did to Detroit to bring it back, and Los Angeles to bring it back, and all the other cities like Philadelphia and Baltimore and Chicago and New York City. Show me where you're having a better life as a middle-class working person than you did 40 years ago. And then you ask, well, then what was the purpose of this whole exercise? All we have now is a sense of wonderment. Or will we get it through this day? Depends upon where you live. Depends upon your circumstance. Depends upon your support system. If you're rich, if you can afford armed guards, if you live in the green zones where it's heavily patrolled and monitored, yeah, you're less likely to meet the real world that is now happening. Is the average person committing crimes? No. Is the average person a racist? No. Is the average person just looking to survive another day with some sense of stability and meaning? Yes. But what happens when that's not the environment for most people? Take a look at the crime. What are we doing about it? We're encouraging it. How does that help society? It only helps the political outcome of those who want to control what we now have as new realities that is being forced upon all of us. So this gender dysphoria, for example, continues to rise significantly and starts at younger and younger ages, 2-3 years of age. What person in reality would say that a three-year-old, understands what their true sexual identity should be? And yet we're making that the norm. Although the percentage of people either professionally or self-diagnosed with gender dysphoria remain very small, it has nevertheless been raised to a level of national priority at the expense of many other mentally and physically handicapped persons that make up 27% of our entire population. Never before in our history as a country have we had nearly one-third of the population suffering from mental diseases or illnesses or imbalances. And what is the solution? Drugs? Surgery? Electroconvulsive therapy? And show me the science where that works. You won't, because it doesn't exist. This brief reference that I just mentioned, noting the consequences of the dark abyss at the center of American culture, only highlights a small sliver of the consequences of the intellectual ignorance underlying critical race theory and woke culture. During the past 5 years, there has been an aggressive encroachment of woke and postmodern race ideologies into every aspect of society. Local school boards, college campuses, corporations, human resources, and the halls of federal and state legislative bodies. The leaders of this trend are by no means our culture's best and brightest. Rather, those are the first to find themselves canceled or handed their termination papers. Yes, those who had the courage to stand up and speak truth to power were eliminated. And they were eliminated so they no longer have a voice or respect if they can find any form. Rather, it is the activist, the illiterate, the immoral, who shout the loudest, who manage to be heard, and who are given credibility that they have not deserved. Those of us who critically recognize social dynamics observe this hysterical phenomena with credulous amusement. When Tucker Carlson reports about a woman who wouldn't change a baby's diapers unless she received the infant's permission, or you shouldn't hold your lover's hand unless you first ask permission, or you can't cuddle them in the middle of the night until you wake them up and ask permission, otherwise it's some form of assault upon another person's body. The sane among us step back and wonder, What is going on? Self-righteous university students demand professors abide by the students' demands, and teach only what they want, and only to the degree that they tolerate the class. Those teachers who stand up for educational integrity and the teaching profession's traditions are ostracized. Students petition college administrators have dissenting, unwoke professors fired. Tenured professors fired. Evergreen College fired two tenured professors who were loved by their students. But outside agitators come onto the campus, started riots, threatened the teachers, and you can see in one of the video clips the professor, the most liberal professor on the college campus, trying to reason, trying to understand what was being said in the shouting, the screaming, the racial epithets, all to no avail. Those who came, as always, did not come to negotiate a new understanding, to open new doors of enlightenment, to see what was special within the other person's understanding of life and relationships. They came to destroy. And that's what we've seen for a long time. What is especially notable is how rapidly this raging woke and an inverse racial movement has become incorporated into our public and private institutions. This includes the adolescent tantrums by political parties to censor their opponents, pass laws banning certain kinds of free speech, and the gradual erasure of social norms of binding relationships that fueled the founding of our nation. In California, in Oregon, in Washington State, in Illinois, they have laws now where if you don't acknowledge certain pronouns, you can be fined. Impelled speech means no free speech. Without free speech, there are no free thoughts. Without free thoughts, you cannot open doors of new understanding. You cannot surrender old habits or old notions of life. You have to be imbued with a sense of conformity, where you conform to an artificial construct where your free will, your free mind, your free expression are no longer allowed, and you dare speak the wrong word, the wrong thought, the wrong ideals, and you can be put into jail or lose your job or lose your reputation. Just look at Wikipedia as one example of how that works. None of this could have happened if the majority of Americans were not asleep. In the 21st century, we can agree that equality is crucial for harmonizing the historical aberrations such as slavery and the denigration of women and gays that have haunted us through the generations. Everyone should be able to have the opportunity to succeed in reaching their goals. However, despite the new woke and critical race movement's condemnation of meritocracy, its followers demand the same outcome. Therefore, if you have no effort, no scholarship, no motivation to do well, you should still get the A in class. You should still get a trophy for just showing up, even if you don't compete. And that means that the person least qualified for any position, least able to make a positive input into our society, is now relegated to step on the pedestal. Let's praise them, let's reward them for doing nothing except complaining and demanding that they receive more. And let's shun, deny, abuse, and ostracize those who, no matter what their background, African Americans, Latino Americans, Asian Americans, Caucasian Americans, who work hard, who are not entitled, who came from challenge and adversity, but chose through their own sense of accomplishment to achieve something. Take it all away. They don't deserve it, we're told. Because when they get an A, or they succeed at something that we don't even want to try at, then they're either racist or they should be punished. Think of that. Think of that. Of course, once Rome passed a certain threshold, after several centuries of decline, its final collapse accelerated quickly. We are there now. This is the nature of entropy. Aside from the enormous disparity in wealth between Rome's social classes. A perpetual war economy, widespread political corruption, and a decline in literacy, Roman society was also plagued by a mental virus of magical thinking and superstition. In our own time, the level of American illiteracy is astounding. The average American, likewise, lives in a garbage heap of superstitious hopes for a utopian carnival where the superficial free thought reigns. However, at the same time, a future utopia requires a new vocabulary and the banning of words, and the new woke order finds personally offensive. Well, what are some of those words? You've heard them before. Let's eliminate woman completely. What about all the achievements women have made through the suffragettes up to this time, the sacrifice they've made? Too bad. No one will longer use woman, man, brother, sister, father, uncle, aunt, family. No, those are offensive to the woke order. Following the warnings of social psychologist Leon Festinger in the 1950s, the American populace is being, something you probably haven't heard, de-individuated. De-individuation is a state whereby individuals lose their sense of self-awareness and their realistic and healthy personal identity in order to become part of a crowd, a groupthink, a consensus that opposes other crowds. Normal, absolutely normal moral restraints are cast aside and replaced by impulsive and deviant behavior. The more decadent, the better. Have you watched the television program, the reality show, where people go up and smack each other as hard as they can to see who is knocked down? Think of the damage done to your head, to your eye, to your body. And this is popular. At what level we say we have sunk into such depravity that we cannot return? It is our new opiate. And the more you take, the more you want, the more you desire, more violence. The entire woke narrative now giving away to antisocial behavior is a notable consequence of the de-individuation being approved by government and private industry. De-individuation reinforces illiteracy and blatant stupidity. For example, when Democrats brought Amy Arambibe, an executive for an abortion rights organization, before the House Judiciary Committee to give testimony, she claimed men could get pregnant and have abortions. Biological men. Again, we are reminded of Jefferson's words, illiteracy is the enemy of progress and the ally of tyranny. Dr. Henry Nasrallah, editor-in-chief of the Journal of Current Psychiatry, remarks that we are in a historical moment when, quote, the passage of time ruthlessly increases the entropy of everything in life. We're not only witness entropy in civilizations and societies, but also in our possessions, dwellings, businesses, in our physical body and mental faculties. Therefore, new energy must be invested in order to slow or reverse entropic processes. Yet without the restraints of a new constructive and restorative vision, entropy runs amok. During the dramatic public shock triggered by COVID-19 pandemic, lockdowns, social distancing, businesses and school closures, and financial loss, there was a parade of incessant media porn reminded us repeatedly that death could knock on our door at any moment. That was not true for the vast majority of the public, but we believed it was. Why? Because they were the authorities and we were not. They were people of responsible position, and therefore we deferred to them. And how often do we defer to people because of their social position, their achievements, their wealth, their celebrity status, and their power? Who are we, after all, mere mortals? Yet they were wrong about every single thing they said. and those who were right were cast aside. The federal government's and medical establishment's gross negligence on multiple fronts during the pandemic gave rise to rapid degeneration of America's social order. Distress from the loss of normalcy accelerated the nation's collective psychological entropy. This in turn contributed to a resuscitated racial tensions, hateful biases, toxic relationships, drug addiction, alcoholism, and suicide. Permissible crime. Think of what it would be like historically, walking down a street, in any city in America or town. You knew the people, you were a community, you respected one another. People could leave their wares outside, their fruits, their trees, their plants. Nobody stole them because we didn't steal. We had a common moral equation, no matter what our religious beliefs. Now, I remember a person who's well-known in New York retail, and he would stop by my health food store in the evening on his way home from Zabar's. He's Saul Zabar. He's in his mid-90s. Wonderful human being, very ethical, very honorable. And one day he said, I want to take you on a walk. So we walked down from 89th and Broadway to 72nd Street and Broadway. And this remarkable mind he had for old memory, mind you, he's like 95 or so, he would go on every block and say, my brother Eli and I used to walk to the store and we would know every merchant. And each block had anywhere between 9 and 10 businesses on it. And those businesses were family businesses. So one generation took over for the next. And he said, you never had to lock stuff up, just left it out. Nobody stole it. He said, people knew each other. We were a community. No matter what our background, ethnicities, we respected each other. We gave respect and we received respect. I'll never forget that walk down Broadway with him. What do you have today? You have businesses, one business alone in San Francisco, a store selling tools for, you know, like a small Home Depot, but a business owned by a family. $600,000 in stolen merchandise last year. And they couldn't stop a person from leaving the store with stolen merchandise. People would come in with shopping carts and run around the store because the city council, the legal system in the state level and the local level no longer made stealing a crime. And so organized crime took advantage. Thousands of businesses have closed. They can't stay open, not because everyone's stealing. The average person does not steal. The average person is still wanting to remember those days when everybody was a good neighbor. But the body politic is so corrupt today that we have that. And so look at all the small businesses in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, going broke. Not because we have more criminals. Oh yeah, we have 30,000 gangs. But because we no longer care about the innocent citizen and the outcome of a crime, carjacking, a robbery. But we care about the criminal. What does that say about a society? It shows what the media has been supporting, what the government has been supporting, those in power have supported, corporate America has supported. But with the average citizen has just been shaking their head saying, why? How did we get here? Well, we got here because we've allowed everything to degenerate. So we no longer are normal as a society. We no longer are each other's good neighbors. We no longer care for each other. Individuals certainly do. And the average person in America is a decent human being. They just want things to return, but they won't ever return. Because those in power never surrender power, ever. So when you think, well, can't we go to work on trying to revitalize these institutions, government, corporate, social? Name which institution is going to allow their current trajectory of profiting off your loss to be reversed, to give up their profits, give up their control? Will it be any of the major five corporations that own assets and stock and control over almost all the major corporations in America? No. No. So that's why we have permissible crime and homelessness and rampant disinformation across virtually all mainstream media. It is nothing but, they should call it disinformation mainstream media, because that's what it is. The implosion of all social norms, a psychological disoriented citizenry, and a ruthless cancel culture that is utterly intolerant of anyone else's beliefs. Those who scream the loudest, those who shake their fists, those who batter and beat another human being, those are the people now in control of much of our society. Remarkably, the mobs in the street are little more than bland reflections, a Jungian shadow at the instability and disorder created by the agents of chaos and the entropy who sit in the seats of power. Just as the individual has a shadow, so said Jung, so does society at large. And just as the individual must come to terms with his shadow, so too must society, if it is to be health angst infecting our youth over their self-identity, gender, moral alienation, and a lack of existential purpose in our technologically driven materialistic society has reduced our youth to sentient robots screaming for self-expression. This is a cause for today's woke groupthink contributing to social and political unrest with its destructive outcomes. Whereas Nobel laureate Bertrand Russell warned, the collective passions have a penchant to inflame hatred and rivalry directed towards other groups. And what are we told today? That if you're Caucasian, you're the other group to be attacked and denigrated, never to hold your head high, no matter what your background. Yes. Despite the original values of American liberalism and non-dogmatic, healthy, skeptical inquiry, today's left has perverted its own legacy. The woke have become every bit as intolerant and wrong-headed as the most zealot fundamentalist on the right. This exclusive humanism, as the prominent cultural philosopher Charles Taylor has termed it, is giving rise to a faux universalism. The new woke order's myopic obedience increasingly relies upon the secular power structure of the ruling elite that in turn legislates on its behalf to marginalize and imprison alternative belief systems that do not embrace a secular universalism. Hence, the new radical left no longer tolerates the diversity of traditional beliefs and worldviews. The entropic descent into irrational hostility, collective emotional hysteria, and what the Russian-American sociologist Pritram Sorokin called cultural schizophrenia clings desperately to a grossly materialistic society and a fragile false sense of individuality, an empty void which is completely divorced from any deeper purpose in life, except as George Bush intoned after 9/11, go out and buy stuff. Yes, buy stuff, spend your money. And that represents motivation? No. America is a society in chains. Who said that? Nelson Mandela. To describe a citizenry psychologically crippled by making informed decisions and incapable of participating thoughtfully in a democratic process. Consequently, a democratic renaissance, a new energy to reverse entropy, can only proceed following a revitalization of moral and spiritual values where you respect one another, you do not look at people's skin color or their religious background or their age or their gender or their educational level, you look at them first and foremost as a sacred human being. And in that way, you are all united. You are all equal. And therefore, they are not the other. They are not to be demonized, trashed, reversed, thrown out of the form of public debate. To be worthy of participating in any viable possibility of a democracy in the 21st century, it is necessary to return to becoming what John Adams said, a moral people. I'm Gary Nall, and also on behalf of Richard Gale, I hope you find value in our thoughts. If you have, please share this with others. There are a lot of people, from Joe Rogan to Tucker Carlson and to Jimmy Dore and others, who might find a deeper sense of irony that could help others in their own audience. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I hope that you found some meaning in that. I tried to bring together the problems we're having, identifying how we go forward in life, individually, by families, collectively, and do so with an ethic that we have not had in at least 40 years. Our society is falling apart, and those who are behind this have a motive. I'm trying to share what they see as a one-world government, one currency, one ruling group, not elected, selected, who will own everything and you'll be happy. Well, we're not going to be happy, and we're not going to give it up, but unfortunately they control all of the police, the National Guard, they control everything, and they play hardball. They don't care about you. So this is where we're at. I'm just trying to show some of the underpinnings of how this evolved and what wrong think they're engaged in. If you'd like to share your thoughts, I'd like to hear them. Our number, talkback number, is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're, and we're going to say goodbye to BAI in 5 minutes, hope we'll get some calls in, but I want to play one more clip. This is an interesting clip in that this comes from Steve Kirsch. You may not have heard of Steve Kirsch, but he was a very successful person, I believe in Silicon Valley. And then he got interested in the disinformation campaigns against COVID and the skeptics. And he poured a lot of his own personal research into hiring experts who were independent and not conflicted to come up with data. And it contradicts almost everything we've been taught. So here he is giving testimony at a hearing on safety and efficacy of vaccines.
Are causing harm to our kids. It's not just the COVID vaccines. It's every single one of them. There has never, ever been a study comparing the fully vaccinated kids who follow the CDC schedule versus kids who have not been vaccinated at all, who did not get a vitamin K shot, which is not a vitamin, and whose mother did not get vaccinated. If you compare the results of kids whose mom didn't get vaccinated, no K shot, and no vaccines, and if you compare the outcomes of those kids versus kids who got the CDC schedule, there is a dramatic difference. It is an unbelievable difference. It is a difference that nobody wants to talk about. There are no studies, zero, that show the opposite. You know, I go on Twitter and the doctors say, well, you know, for every study, there's always a study that shows the opposite. This is the one case where there are no studies in medicine that show the opposite results. The fully unvaccinated kids are always healthier. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was a 10-year study done by Dr. Paul Thomas. Yeah. And of course, they got it. They got that study retracted unethically, in violation of the COPE guidelines. That 10-year study showed that the kids who got measles were the kids who were vaccinated against measles. The kids who got mumps were the kids who were vaccinated against mumps. The kids who did not get any vaccines did not get any of the diseases that the kids were vaccinated against, were vaccinated. So when you talk about you shouldn't be discriminated against because you didn't get a vaccine, you should be applauded because you didn't get a vaccine, because you did the right thing. If you're a parent and you didn't vaccinate your kids, you should be applauded because you did the research and you found out that vaccines are causing chronic disease in America. There's a study that was done by the control group. They have over 1,000 people who are unvaccinated. The health outcomes in those people is night and day comparison with fully vaccinated people. We have a 60% rate of people with a chronic disease in America. If you've not been vaccinated at all, the rate is close to zero. And of course, none of this is talked about. They tried to get the CDC to do a study of the vaccinated, fully vaccinated versus the fully unvaccinated. In 2005, CDC Director Judy Gerberding promised to do such a study. She said, yes, we should do such a study. It's important that we do a study now. We can refine it later. And that was nearly 20 years ago. And that study has never been done. And it will never be done. Because they don't want people to know that all these vaccines have been harming people since the very beginning. There is no safe vaccine, not a single one. Not one vaccine is safe and effective. And I actually went on Twitter and I offered $2,500 to anybody who could show me such a study, and nobody was able to produce such a study.
He is actually correct. The U.S. Supreme Court said that all vaccines are, quote, inherently unsafe. All you have to do is read the toxicological data. So they give every excuse for the common good. And so we have to sacrifice some people so everyone else is protected. Let them show me the science. All right, I've written over 60 articles on vaccine safety and efficacy. We're dealing in illusions, but people have freedom of choice, and I do not dissuade anyone or encourage anyone to get a vaccine or not get a vaccine. Just do your homework first. We have a caller on the line, Jeremiah from Harlem. And Jeremiah, let me just say before you come on that we're going to say goodbye to WBI in about a minute. They have to go to the news. We're going to continue right up the top of the hour, and you can listen on PRN.live. Nice to have you on. Share your thoughts with us, Jeremiah.
Oh, it's a pleasure talking with you, Gary. I've been trying to get through recently, but you've been cramming in a lot of power-packed information in every program, so I totally understand when it's not realistic to get to a call at the end of the program. But in regard to what you were just talking about, I think it was a really interesting and good choice of language by Aaron Cariotti, who is one of the outspoken doctors during the whole COVID period. And he made a bunch of great statements in his interview with Steve Kirsch. He was a guest in the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation weekly Zoom meeting. And he made a bunch of outstanding points. But one thing that stood out to me was that he said he had always found it interesting, as I had always found it interesting, how the vaccine conversation was being policed. And it's very interesting. I mean, what other branch of science has been policed in the same manner as the vaccine conversation? It almost occurred to me that it's almost as though the vaccine pushers are claiming that vaccinology is the first ever perfected endeavor of human science. I mean, even the fastest car in the world, you could make a little bit faster, a little bit safer, at least. And anyone who engineers cars or planes understands those things. But for some reason, in vaccinology, products that get injected into our bodies, we're supposed to quickly accept that it's an open and shut case, and there's nothing to question about it. So I find that very strange. But another thing that you've been touching on recently, and I've been meaning to call and just tell this story quickly about some of the absurdity of the so-called, you know, woke agenda or whatever you want to call it, this new kind of atmosphere that we exist in. A good friend of mine is a great musician, and he's also an English professor. He was teaching at the New School. He just had one class that he taught. He wasn't even being brought on board full time. He was the teacher, the professor in one English class. And my good friend, who's a wonderful person, very sensitive and considerate person, was brought in for multiple hearings because the students were complaining about one thing or another. And one thing that occurred was someone actually said he didn't give them a trigger warning before he showed a short film that featured shadows. And they personally are afraid of shadows. And, you know, it was very wrong of him to not issue a trigger warning before showing this short film. They're traumatized because there was shadows in the short film. I mean, these are people who expect to receive a credential for completing their classes. And, I mean, that's like literally a joke when you say someone's scared of their own shadow. I mean, wow, I've never heard of that. And to expect other people to, you know, to be expecting for you to have such a mental disorder, basically. And the fact that what occurred to me, and this is kind of the point that I'm making, is that the people who are legitimizing these hearings, they have nothing else to do in their elite academic high society. They literally are making their own schedules at this point. They, oh yeah, let's have a hearing about, you know, the young woman who's afraid of shadows. You know, students who created hearings because they were changing their pronouns throughout the year and then act outraged when you forgot what the last change was. So you say, I'm a she today, I'm a he tomorrow. Oh, you forgot? I told you I was he last time. No, we're calling a hearing. Your job is on the line. You're being gender insensitive. I mean, these are things that are literally happening. You know, you've described similar things and had content addressing this matter. And I could tell you, like I said, with a very good example of my friend who only taught one class and had to go to three ridiculous hearings because that's the environment that people are, quote unquote, being educated in. It's totally unbelievable, Gary.
You are correct. At Evergreen University, two tenured professors married each other. The most respected liberal professors at the university. Outside the university, provocateurs came and began to demonstrate against them. And there was a video taken of the professor talking with them, asking what was their problem, what did they have against him. He had never had any problem in his entire educational career, nor his wife. And they weren't specific. They just called him a racist and insensitive, and they took over the university. The president of the university fired both tenured professors. And that's what they now run a website, very good one, called Dark Horse. And Brett Weinstein is his name and his wife. So now that started a whole rebellion that if you didn't like a class you were taking, you could protest. If you didn't like math, then math was racist. If you didn't like English literature, it was racist. If you didn't like English, it was racist. If you had a course on European composers, Mozart and Brahms, it was racist. They were racist. Everything became racist. And therefore, the true meaning of it is lost. And but who are these people? What do they contribute to society outside of their rage, anger, and violence, physical and emotional? And yet they're the ones who say, my whole life is going to end because you didn't give me a trigger warning for a shadow in a film. And that's the kind of person that's going to end up a president of a university, not because they deserve it. Look, I had two students in my class who never attended the class. When I went out in the hallway where the other students, and all minority students, Latino and African American, and these two young women said, we're not going to attend your class. I said, well, why not? We don't want to. Okay. Well, then I'm going to have to, you know, fail you. I can't grade you. No, you're not going to fail us. You're going to give us A's. No, I'm not. No, I don't play that game. Well, you will. At the end of the course, and I asked the other students what they thought about it, and they thought that was terrible because they were studying, they were working, they were getting the grades they deserved. And I work with anyone who had any problems. I don't fail people. I work as hard as I can to help them. But then I was called into the one of the top people at the university, And he said, you got to pass them. I said, why? Well, because we don't want to be called racist. I said, you're not racist. I'm not racist. None of this is racist. They're gaming the system. Don't allow these hustlers to do that. Well, we have to. I said, well, I'm not going to. He said, you either sign off on them or quit. I said, then I resign. I will not work at an institution that is so perverse. And they both graduated top of their class without ever attending a single class. And then I knew what we were coming into. And now we're there. So if you don't want to go to class, no problem. You'll get an A. Because there'll be level upon level upon level of administrators just keep opening the doors and apologizing for anything that seems absurd and insane. And that's where we're at. Can this be stopped? Only if people have the courage to find their voice and say, no more, no more. Because when someone is this absolutely determined in an anarchistic way to burn down everything, they're not going to leave anything unburnt. So once you've allowed these people a free rein, and that's what they have, then a whole legion of a new, immature, completely uncivilized generation is going to join them arm in arm, much like in the French Revolution, and that's where we're going. So can this be stopped? Possibly, but it's going to take a lot of people to say no, and no to confirming you must use their pronouns, or in some states like California, Oregon, Washington State, Illinois, you could end up being fined and in some cases arrested if you don't if you say something that a person finds offensive. So the very person who says, oh my God, my life is over, or there's a shadow in a film, is that the person that's going to head up a corporation, head up a diversity division of Coca-Cola or these other crappy companies? Very probably. Well, where's that leave any realistically and appropriately reasonably balanced person? It leaves them out. So if we don't find our voice, then you will not have a voice. That's where we're at, Jeremiah. I appreciate you calling in. And we'll keep hitting it. If you found today's commentary any value, I'm posting it right now on prn.live. And go to the archives, download it, and share it with people, okay?
Absolutely.
Have a nice
day.
Jeremiah, the Oracle of Harlem. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.